Hey, TopCast listeners. During the month of October, we're going to give you a chance to show just how engaged you can be as listeners. There's a contest. You can win a free pound of gourmet coffee or other stuff. To participate or for more details, check out our website, topcast.online.ucf.edu.
From the Center for Distributed Learning at the University of Central Florida, I am Tom Cavanaugh.
And I'm Kelvin Thompson.
And welcome to the Teaching Online podcast, known to its friends and family
as TopCast.
The TopCast. So welcome again. And as we like to do towards the top of the program, the first most important question is, Kelvin, what's in the thermos? And as those of you who may be tuning in for the first time may not know, but Kelvin is something of a coffee aficionado.
That's just a fancy word that means snob, in whatever language that was you were talking. Well, I brought in today a nice little light roast Ethiopian Yirgacheffe.
And, wow.
That's right. It's kind of nice, right? Yirgacheffe's a little region in Ethiopia, a nice coffee growing area. But you know, I brought this in today because I know what we're going to talk about, sort of-ish, topically. And I thought this related to me, and let's see if you can make a connection, see if you can figure this out. Something I read recently I didn't know about Ethiopia is that there's an Ethiopian coffee ceremony. It's a cultural ritual. There's like 3 servings of coffee. You take the same ground, you go through it like 3 times and all. And this is something you do with people that are close to you, and there's a whole, you know, it's served to you, and certain kind of trays and certain kind of cups and all that. But to the point for today, what's interesting is the person who pours the coffee, like I just did for you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You like the coffee?
Yeah, it's good.
That's just the cremora you put in it. the person who this is an expert pourer. Can you believe it? Mm-hmm. You know, like I dripped on myself here, but the expert pourer, as I understand it, you like pour it from like a foot away. And there's like you sort of do this little circular motion, and there's like a ring, you know, the coffee kind of goes up to the edge of these particular cups, and there's all these specific performance expectations of this expert pourer. They don't let just anybody do it.
Okay.
They try to have this generational thing. Kids can serve, but only this seasoned person who has mastered the competencies of pouring coffee in this particular way can be the expert pourer. I wonder what we're talking about today, Tom.
Interesting. I think I'm getting it now. So only somebody who's mastered the competencies can pour the coffee. That's interesting. Well, as you may have guessed, we are talking about competencies today. And the one of the big, giant buzzwords in higher education is competency-based education. And what is that? How would you define competency-based education, Kelvin?
Good night. Well, first, just to kind of get a little street cred, right, we probably have to say that competency-based learning, instruction, education, this is not brand new stuff, right? We've had good little instructional designers would know that competency-based instruction goes back decades and decades and decades, and good instructional design has an eye on performance and so forth. But more recently, the whole idea of articulating performance competencies, leveraging technologies to allow a student to efficiently demonstrate their competency and move expeditiously through coursework, that would be what I would think of as competency-based education. What do you think?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that there are a few things that come to mind when we say competency-based education, and we'll talk specifically about, I think, about some of those characteristics as the conversation continues. But in my mind, when we say competency-based, for now, I'm thinking of a broad category that includes things also called mastery-based, that includes personalized learning. There have been a lot of labels I've heard on it, but for now, let's just talk sort of broadly about it.
Ooh, I got it, because I grew up without having a dryer or anything. So we had a clothesline outside. So it's the competency-based education clothesline.
Okay.
It stretches across, and we're just clipping up the garments there, Tom.
Okay. That wasn't part of your Ethiopian anecdote. was it?
No.
No, okay.
That's just extra.
Extra. All right. So the clothesline, that's interesting. And so when we say something that seems like it belongs on the clothesline, you help us out.
We'll clip it up there.
We'll clip it up there. We'll put a pin in it.
Put it a pin in it. Yeah. I'm just thinking.
Okay. All right. Well, it probably would be good to set some context that as of the moment we are recording this, not I don't know when anybody might actually be listening to it, but the moment we're recording this, there are estimated to be about 350 different institutions across the country that are either doing planning or contemplating some sort of competency-based education program. And to my knowledge, at this moment, there are four that are actually delivering serious direct assessment type competency-based programs.
With financial aid from the U.S.
I don't know that for sure.
Authorization.
That would have been good if we did some prep, right?
That's
some research
right.
on this.
We're making this stuff up here,
right.
You know?
I don't know. I think the financial aid question is an open question because many of the programs that I'm aware of do not have a financial aid associated
right.
with them because of the complexity.
Yeah.
Now, as I understand it, there is an exception you can apply to the feds to get to grant financial aid. I'm not sure how many of those 350 are going through that process.
Right.
So that's almost a movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably more than a MOOC kind of, you know, fad if you want to define MOOCs as a fad.
Yeah, well, let's do that.
So I mentioned the words direct assessment, and maybe not everybody knows what that means.
What in the world is direct assessment, Tom?
So there are different kinds of competency-based programs, and these are important when you're talking about both regional accreditors as well as the feds, and those have to do with either direct assessment or for credit, kind of more traditional structural competency-based programs. So I'll start with the traditional one. Would be a course that would be credit-based, so say a three-credit course that students could progress through potentially more quickly. Maybe there would be a slightly different pricing model or something. But the structures for awarding credit and setting up terms and things might be unchanged. But the way the student takes the course might be slightly different. Now, for direct assessment, that would be different in that there might not be any sort of three-credit structure to the course. It might just be a series of modules or competencies that's one long continuum that they work on as fast as they can that makes sense to them. And by taking direct assessment, they get competency awarded to them for that.
And it's probably worth saying, right, that there's some people who've got a lot of experience with this.
Right.
A couple of niche institutions, maybe not serving populations at scale, but Excelsior College comes to mind. There's CALE, right, the Council for Adult and Experiential Learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got processes and all that maybe are not super-duper technology efficiency powered, but they've been doing this a while. So now this new movement, we're
right.
kind of seeing other people come at this, I guess.
And certainly Western Governors is
yes.
probably the best known.
At a bigger scale.
At a bigger scale. Yeah. And they've been doing it a while.
Yes.
But they are awarding credit for their courses. So they're not doing the direct assessment. But they know an awful lot about this. And, and they've got a pretty interesting model in a couple of different ways. In one regard, they've separated the assessment from the instruction.
Right.
So that you have somebody who works with you kind of as a faculty member, mentor person that helps you learn what you have not demonstrated competency on based on a pretest or something. And then somebody completely separate will assess your competence. Somebody who is not invested in your success necessarily. And so it's a much more objective and you could say a little more instructionally pure way of assessing somebody. And that model, I think, is kind of interesting. And it's not what most people are doing.
No, that's right. That's kind of cool. I heard, I can't remember now if it was, I don't know why I get these two confuse some, but Ed Klimowski from Charter Oak State College and Paul LeBlanc from Southern New Hampshire University.
They're both New Englanders.
That's right. That's most, you know, they look just alike. No, they not really.
No, they don't.
Not so much. But one of them was talking about kind of the implications for faculty roles, right? And of course, some of our faculty colleagues get a little bit paranoid when we get into some of these technology-enabled trends. Oh, you've got all my material online. You're not going to need me. I'm going to get fired and I'm replaced by the robo prof there or something.
Yeah.
And of course, that's not the deal. But in one of their institutions, they talked about the faculty role being different, and it might get more to coaching and assessment and less delivery or instruction, what we'd consider traditional instruction.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, that faculty role is still critical.
Yes.
You know, it's still really important. But I think you're right. I think it's fair to say that it the nature of the interaction between faculty and students changes in this kind of environment, just as it does with an adaptive learning environment. And in many ways, adaptive learning could be the engine behind a competency-based program. So those two things would be kind of hand in glove.
Yeah.
So that I think that idea of separate assessments, assessment specialists, is interesting and is being experimented with in a couple of places. So I mentioned Western Governors. I think Brandman University is using that model. They've just launched a competency-based program, and we'll see how it takes off. I think that it's important to identify the student population you're going for with a competency-based program.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's somebody who might have some work experience, somebody who's interested in moving more quickly, who might want to, who's motivated by saving money, perhaps, depending upon the financial models we can talk about. So, you know, all of those things play into this concept that we were talking about a little bit earlier, which is access, cost, and quality, and you know, the iron triangle, you know. Do you think that competency-based education is a way to kind of break the constraints of the iron triangle?
Certainly seems like it could be. I tell you this, it certainly seems like a lot of people believe that it is, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You
know, in some of the circles that we travel and some of the people that we know, I'd say one of the reasons that CBE, because we're on a monogram basis, CBE is widely, I think, believed to be a way to break the iron triangle, to release those constraints, you know, so that they're not held in balance. You know, the old better, cheaper, faster, pick two. You know, hey, how about if I want all three? I'd like that. So certainly, I think a lot of people are believing that for sure. But you know, so far, I think you've touched on credit stuff, but the direct assessment, all of that is sort of the unbundling of the credit hour, but there are ways of doing competency-based education that are not relying on, as you said, Western Governors is still using credit hours, so you don't have to totally be going that direction. So direct assessment, even though you used WGU as an example, are there other, maybe more, I don't know that I want to use this term, but more conservative approaches that are still credit-bearing and more of our traditional institutions, ways that they can play this out?
Sure, yeah. And in many ways, you know, Western Governors still offers a traditional, you know, structure with credit hours.
Yeah.
But I think most of these schools are, of these 350 anyway, aren't planning, you know, radical revolution, more like evolution of the model. And credit hours, I think, is the basis for much of that. I mean, we're talking here internally about experimenting with some competency-based programs, and at this point, we're not talking about you know, cracking the model open, but working within existing structures.
Yeah.
So existing courses with existing credit hours, but using perhaps procedural exceptions to allow them to accelerate, whether it's giving them a late add into the next course if they finish the first one early, giving them extra time if they need it, by giving them an incomplete or something, you know, whatever it is. There are ways that you can work within your existing rules to try and give students more flexibility.
So that's more of a conservative, lower-hanging fruit, lower-threshold kind of an approach. But without getting into our own laundry too much. See, there's a laundry theme.
Yeah, this week. There's your clothesline.
That's
yeah.
right. Without getting too much into the laundry, even that here, as we've been in our initial explorations with one program in mind, we've still faced some challenges in figuring out operationally how to do that.
Right.
You know, that's it's a funny thing. Try to innovate.
Innovation's hard, right?
Yeah, it was easy. Anybody could do it.
I heard Peter Senge say one time that innovation is a team sport.
Yeah.
And it's so true, because you can't do these things by yourself.
And apparently a contact sport. You come away bloody and bruised.
Sometimes. So maybe it'd be useful to just kind of list a couple of characteristics of competency-based, at least how I've defined it, that we can hang up on your clothesline.
All right.
So the idea would be to, and I didn't make this term up, but to permit a time variable learning constant kind of approach instead
of... that's profound. You should trademark that.
Yeah, I wish I had thought of that. But it's really appropriate. And I don't know, I think I might have first heard it from Mark Milliron when he was with Western Governors. Mm-hmm, but it's really I think, the centerpiece of a mastery-based, competency-based program. So rather than the usual structure which we have now, which is time constant, you've got 15-week semester, learning variable.
Right.
Whatever you have at the end of that constant time is your grade, whatever your performance level is. You flip it. So the time is completely variable and the learning is constant. So you say, I want somebody to achieve competence, mastery. Yeah. That's the learning. How long is it going to take you to do that? Can you do it more quickly or less quickly? Whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So another one would be, that's in the service of that, students only need to learn the material where they have not demonstrated mastery.
Yes.
So you enter into a program or a course and perhaps take some sort of a pre-assessment. And if you can demonstrate mastery or competence in certain objectives or competencies, then you're done with those.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would immediately shorten the amount of time that you have to spend in that particular course going through that material. And then in addition to acceleration, not only by demonstrating mastery, but maybe just because you pick it up more quickly, you can go faster. If you need more time in order to be successful, in some cases, students, if they just had an extra couple of weeks, they would have gotten it, or maybe a little extra remediation. That remediation becomes available to them with that extra time, and or both. It may be just extra remediation, or remediation and time allows them to achieve the mastery that's expected, whatever the objective is. There are probably more characteristics to put up as a definition, but I think those kind of get to the heart of why would you want to offer a competency-based program.
Now, that's good. I did notice, though, I mean, it might be worth a comment here. I did notice that you used synonymously competence and mastery as you were talking there. Would everybody agree that those are the same thing?
No. I know why you asked that question.
Why do I ask that question?
Yeah, I mean, people have, I think maybe even it was John Ebersole at Excelsior that has written about the difference between those two things. And
yeah.
So I'm using them sort of loosely. Somebody could say competence and mastery are two very different things, and it might have to do with the performance standard that you're measuring them against. And I get the nuances of that. We probably don't have time to go into all of that. But, yeah, thank you for pointing that out, because you're right. Some people feel very strongly about that.
But in fairness, others, I really do think, use those terms interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of, again, we talked about this in another segment, but to use your terminology carefully.
Right.
Unbundle that.
Boundary objects.
Exactly.
Right? Say one thing and two people are thinking two different definitions.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
At least, for sure. But I heard you say, and this is probably something to put on the clothesline as a concept anyway, is acceleration seems to be a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly lower cost, although here as we've been exploring CBE at our institution, we haven't thus far talked about a lower cost. We've talked more from a standpoint of other value add for the student.
Right, the acceleration in particular. But for those schools that are already kind of experimenting with this, folks like Western Governors or Northern Arizona or Kentucky Technical and Community College System or Southern New Hampshire, Brandman University, there are a number of schools that are doing this already where the student isn't paying for the credit hours. They're not even paying for the competencies. They're paying for the time.
Yep.
And that model, so you pay $2,500 or $3,000 every 6 months to take as much content, to complete as much content as you possibly can. For the motivated student, that can be really economically beneficial for them.
Sure.
Because it'll be way cheaper for them. But if they go slowly, it might not be cheaper for them, but they might be more successful. You know, there's this cost-benefit trade-off they're going to have to, each individual student is going to have to decide, is this best for me? Is this going to help me achieve my goals, my educational goals?
And I think arguably, even if you don't have one of those progressive financial models, if you can move more quickly, if you can engage with content and performance standards that you haven't already demonstrated, I mean, you have to, if you, quote unquote, learn, to learn stuff that you don't already, you can't already demonstrate, then that's kind of motivating, right? I mean, you feel like that's more relevant and probably more likely to be successful, especially if you bring in some of these other, I don't know if I want to say innovations, but these other characteristics like the success coaches and sometimes partnerships with local employers and so forth. It's like a whole package deal. Like when I uproot a plant, you know, you get all the roots and all ensnared because there's all kinds of things that go with this too, potentially. Emphasis on performance, e-portfolios, documentation of performance, maybe digital badges.
Sure, prior learning assessment.
Yes.
So you bring in your portfolio of
lay
whatever.
It out.
Yeah, you know, here's my certificates from when I was in the Air Force, you know, whatever it might be,
right.
If you've got military certifications or industry certifications, you know, there are mechanisms for awarding credit or competence for those things. You know, it's a whole suite of personalized services for students.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll mention one last characteristic that some of these programs have that I find interesting, which is the structure for semesters.
Mm-hmm.
The more traditional programs might still have regular semester starts, whether that's on a 16-week or an 8-week or whatever the interval is. But some programs, and I'm thinking specifically of maybe like Northern Arizona, you can start any day of the year. You know, there's 365 starts a year. You start your program immediately. That's interesting, and not all institutions are ready for that kind of innovation.
Are you kidding? We're having a hard time working without our existing structures here.
Right.
Oh, did I say that out loud again? Well, just let's keep it right here in the room. Nobody else will hear
Nobody
me say
else
that.
Will hear that.
That's right.
So I think that can be very attractive for students who are, especially adult learners, who when they make the decision to go back to school or go to school as an adult learner, that decision is made and then they're ready. They want to wait 5 months till the fall start or whatever it might be, depending upon the timing of when they make that decision.
That's right.
You know, when are the admits for our semester? Well, every day you can get started. And that actually is a competitive advantage if you're thinking about it in the marketplace.
That's right. And I think that emphasis on the learner, the emphasis on especially the adult learner working. I have a friend who was a non-traditional student, finished an undergraduate degree, went on for a master's degree, and for his master's, he went to a for-profit who, say what you will, some of us might, you know, in our setting might go, You know, that's kind of a tough thing because from where he sits, they serve him well.
Sure.
You know, they are making sure that he is on track, successful, and he is efficiently progressing through his course of study.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't always say that we at our traditional institutions are doing right by all of our students in that same way.
Right, right. And competency-based is one more arrow in the quiver to try and help serve these students.
That's right. Better. Better evidence of learning, more quickly, more relevant, all that.
Okay. Well, I see that our clock is winding down. So with that, and I think I'm almost done drinking the coffee. It was excellent. Thank you again.
Oh, that's good.
So for the Teaching Online podcast, I'm Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See you later.